After the last glacial age, this cold north mitigated its severities very slowly, and was, for long, without any other population than the wandering hunters who spread eastward and across the Bering Strait. North and Central Europe and Asia didn't become sufficiently temperate for agriculture until quite recent times, that is, within the limit of 12,000 or possibly even 10,000 years, and a dense forest period intervened between this age of the hunter and the agricultural clearings. This forest period was also a very wet period. It's been called the pluvial or lacustrine age, the rain or pond period. It has to be remembered that the outlines of the land of the world have changed greatly even in the last 100 centuries. Across European Russia, from the Baltic to the Caspian Sea as the ice receded, there certainly spread much water and many impassable swamps. The Caspian Sea and the Sea of Aral and parts of the desert of Turkestan are the vestiges of a great extent of sea that reached far up to the Volga Valley and sent an arm westward to join the Black Sea. Mountain barriers much higher than they are now, and the arm of the sea that's now the region of the Indus completed the separation of the early Nordic races from the Mongolians and the Dravidians, and made the broad racial differentiation of those groups possible. Again, the blown sand desert of Sahara. It's not a dried-up sea, but a wind desert, and was once fertile and rich in life, becoming more and more dry and sandy, cut the Caucasians off from the sparse primitive Negro population in the central forest regions of Africa. The Persian Gulf extended very far to the north of its present head and combined with the Syrian desert to cut off the Semitic peoples from the eastern areas, while on the other hand, the south of Arabia, much more fertile than it is today, may have reached across what's now the Gulf of Aden towards Abyssinia and Somaliland. The Mediterranean and Red Sea may even have been fertile valleys, containing a string of freshwater lakes during the pluvial age. The Himalayas and the higher and vaster massif of Central Asia and the northward extension of the Bay of Bengal up to the present Ganges Valley divided off the Dravidians from the Mongolians. The canoe was the chief link between Dravidian and southern Mongol, and the Gobi system of seas and lakes, which presently became the Gobi Desert, and the great system of mountain chains which follow one another across Asia from the center to the northeast, split the Mongolian races into the Chinese and the Ural-Altaic language groups. Bering Strait, when this came into existence before or after the pluvial period, isolated the Amerindians. We're not suggesting here, be it noted, that these ancient separations were absolute separations, but that they were effectual enough at least to prevent any great intermixture of blood or any great intermixture of speech in those days of man's social beginnings. There was, nevertheless, some amount of meeting and exchange even then, some drift of knowledge that spread the crude patterns and use of various implements and the seeds of a primitive agriculture about the world. 8th. The fundamental tongues of these 9 main language groups, we've noted, weren't by any means all the human speech beginnings of the Neolithic age. They're the latest languages, the survivors, which have ousted their more primitive predecessors. There may have been other, and possibly many other, ineffective centres of speech, which were afterwards overrun by the speakers of still surviving tongues, and of elementary languages which faded out. We find strange little patches of speech still in the world which don't seem to be connected with any other language about them. Sometimes, however, an exhaustive inquiry seems to affiliate these disconnected patches, seems to open out to us tantalizing glimpses of some simpler, wider, and more fundamental and universal form of human speech. One language group that's been keenly discussed is the Basque group of dialects. The Basques, live now on the north and south slopes of the Pyrenees. They number perhaps 600,000 altogether in Europe, and to this day they are a very sturdy and independent-spirited people. Their language, as it exists today, is a fully developed one, but it's developed upon lines absolutely different from those of the Aryan languages about it. Basque newspapers have been published in the Argentine and in the United States to supply groups of prosperous emigrants. The earliest French settlers in Canada were Basque, and Basque names are frequent among the French Canadians to this day. Ancient remains point to a much wider distribution of the Basque speech and people over Spain. For a long time, this Basque language was a profound perplexity to scholars, and its structural character led to the suggestion that it might be related to some Amerindian tongue. A. H. Keane in Man, Past and Present assembles reasons for linking it, though remotely, with the Berber language of North Africa, and through the Berber, with the general body of Hamitic languages, but this relationship is questioned by other philologists. They find Basque more akin to certain similarly stranded vestiges of speech found in the Caucasian mountains, and they're disposed to regard it as a last surviving member, much changed and specialized, of a once very widely extended group of pre-Hamitic languages, otherwise extinct, spoken chiefly by peoples of that brunette Mediterranean race, which once occupied most of Western and Southern Europe and Western Asia, and which may have been very closely related to the Dravidians of India and the peoples with a Heliolithic culture who spread eastward, thence through the East Indies, to Polynesia and beyond. It's quite possible that over Western and Southern Europe, language groups extended 8 or 10,000 years ago that have completely vanished before Aryan tongues. Later on, we shall note in passing the possibility of 3 lost language groups represented by, first, ancient Cretan, Lydian, and the like, though these may have belonged, says Sir H. H. Johnston, to the Basque, Caucasian, Dravidian group, second, Sumerian, and third, Elamite. The suggestion has been made, it's a mere guess, that ancient Sumerian may have been a linking language between the early Basque, Caucasian, and early Mongolian groups. If this is true, then we have in this Basque, Caucasian, Dravidian, Sumerian, Proto-Mongolian group a still more ancient and more ancestral system of speech than the fundamental Hamitic. We have something more like the linguistic missing link, more like an ancestral language than anything else we can imagine at the present time. It may have been related to the Aryan and Semitic and Hamitic languages much as the primitive lizards of later Paleozoic times were related to the mammals, birds, and dinosaurs, respectively. 9. The Hottentot language is said to have affinities with the Hamitic tongues, from which it separated by the whole breadth of Bantu-speaking Central Africa. A Hottentot-like language with Bushman affinities is still spoken in equatorial East Africa, and this strengthens the idea that the whole of East Africa was once Hamitic-speaking. The Bantu languages and peoples spread in comparatively recent times from some center of origin in west-central Africa and cut off the Hottentots from the other Hamitic peoples, but it's at least equally probable that the Hottentot is a separate language group. Among other remote and isolated little patches of language are the Papuan speech of New Guinea and the native Australian. The now extinct Tasmanian language is but little known. What we do know of it is in support of what we have guessed about the comparative speechlessness of Paleolithic man. We may quote a passage from Hutchinson's Living Races of Mankind upon this matter. The language of the natives is irretrievably lost. Only imperfect indications of its structure and a small proportion of its words having been preserved. In the absence of sibilants and some other features, their dialects resembled the Australian and were of ruder, of less developed structure, and so imperfect that, according to Joseph Milligan, our best authority on the subject, they observed no settled order or arrangement of words in the construction of their sentences, but conveyed in a supplementary fashion by tone, manner, and gesture those modifications of meaning which we express by mood, tense, number, and so on. Abstract terms were rare. For every variety of gum tree or wattle tree there was a name, but no word for tree in general, nor for qualities such as hard, soft, warm, cold, long, short, round, and so on. Anything hard was like a stone, anything round like the moon, and so on, usually suiting the action to the word and confirming by some sign the meaning to be understood.